This episode is brought to you in part by Richmond Graduate University. The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly. Richmond Graduate University can equip you to become a licensed professional counselor, integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmond.edu.
You're listening to Seeing and Believing, a film and television podcast that searches for the sacred on screen. I'm Wade Bearden.
And I'm Kevin McClinathan. This is the part of the show, Wade, where usually I come up with something to joke about that ties into the film that we're reviewing later on in the episode. So I thought I might say something about puppets because those figure in pretty prominently, but I think I used that up already when we talked about Annette recently, so I don't know, I'm at a little bit of a loss, unless you want me to say something about the heavy eye makeup that you're wearing right now.
I'll allow you to say something about that if you're cool with me singing a special while I take up an offering.
Deal. I don't even have to think about that. Take it away whenever you're ready.
Actually, you know what? Maybe we'll do that at the end of the service. Listeners.
Okay, maybe later.
We are reviewing the new film from Michael Showalter, The Eyes of Tammy Faye.
We're also going to be sharing a pretty big announcement later on in the episode, so make sure to listen to the end to hear that. It's going to be an episode full of big feelings and big eyelashes. That is all coming up on episode 305 of Seeing and Believing.
Remover? Oh no. That's it. That'd be all. They're permanently lined. Oh. And my eyes are permanently lined and my eyebrows are permanently on, so there's not a whole lot you can do.
My goodness. I didn't know. Have you never done pictures without those eyelashes?
Nope, and I never will. Because that's my trademark. And you know, if I take that away, then it's not me. And no one's gonna want to look at me without my trademark, so I hold on to that.
Even if we soften them up
No, you can do anything you want. But my eyelashes stay right where they are.
That's really you.
Mm. Well, yeah, this is who I am.
Yes, listeners, we are here with episode 305 of Seeing and Believing. We're going to be reviewing The Eyes of Tammy Faye just in a bit. And Kevin, I mentioned offering. We're going to take up our own offering. No, we're going to talk about our Patreon campaign. We're just having a little bit of fun today in the episode. We appreciate everyone who supports our Patreon campaign. You keep the show going. And Kevin, we've got a number of different donation levels on Patreon. One of our favorites is the What Can You Buy for $5 level. And Kevin, I wanted to ask you what someone could hypothetically buy for $5, and if you tell me a prayer cloth, I will reach my hand through the microphone and I will have to slap you.
Okay, well, I was going to say something about that, but I think that we should, seeing as how this is a family show, we should avoid violence wherever possible. So I'll pull an audible on that one. $5 would get you a special little hutch. So you know how rabbits kind of, they dig a little hole in the ground, and that's where mm-hmm. they sleep, and they keep their babies warm and all that. So I figure something of that nature, except human-sized, of course, seems pretty cozy and like a nice thing to have for $5 if you're kind of feeling like roughing it a little bit.
Yeah. And especially the weather's starting to cool off. Fall is on its way, and having one of those, I don't know if you would say homes, one of those primitive camping necessities, it's going to be huge, Kevin. It's going to be huge. If you don't want either a prayer cloth or the little human-sized hutch, I don't know quite what to call it, you can support our Patreon campaign. Just hop on over to patreon.com/seeing_believing. Seeing_podcast. Kevin, we're going to jump into our review today. Director Michael Showalter has brought us a new film, The Eyes of Tammy Faye, based on the 2000 documentary by Fenton Bailey and Randy Barbato. Here's the film's official synopsis. In the 1970s, Tammy Faye Baker, played by Jessica Chastain, and her husband, Jim, played by Andrew Garfield, rise from humble beginnings to create the world's largest religious broadcasting network and theme park. Tammy Faye becomes legendary for her indelible eyelashes, her idiosyncratic singing, and her eagerness to embrace people from all walks of life. However, financial improprieties, scheming rivals, and a scandal soon threaten to topple their carefully constructed empire. Kevin, a number of people might already be familiar with this story, depending on their age and depending on which avenue of Christianity they grew up in. I did want to ask you, before watching this movie, how much did you know about the Baker saga? And did this film push you to reconsider any of your preconceived notions or ideas?
Well, I was pretty familiar with it. I vaguely remember them kind of being a, you know, the butts of jokes, you know, when I was growing up, but I didn't really know exactly why. I actually want to give a shout out to Martin Wendell Jones. He used to be a writer for Christ Pop Culture. He's written lots of places online, but he actually did a deep dive into the Baker saga for WashingtonExaminer.com, I believe. We'll maybe like post a link to that story in the show notes so our listeners can track it down and read it for themselves. That was kind of, reading that deep dive was what provided me with the foundation of what I knew about the real life story going into this film. So I kind of, you know, reread that before seeing this, and you know, it kind of helped me, you know, make sure that I was familiar enough with the story that I could kind of keep an eye out for similarities and divergences. So that's where I was as far as the real life saga goes. I do want to say that I don't know that this new film really does a whole lot for me in terms of making me see any of the principal characters in this drama, if you can call it that, any differently. I think it's a pretty standard, the way that it tells the story, I guess, is pretty standard and straightforward. And a lot of what it does that's interesting, I think, is actually found in the performances, specifically in Jessica Chastain's performance as Tammy Faye Baker herself. And Wade, you know, after being on the podcast for me, but for this long, you know that I'm a big Jessica Chastain fan, and you know, we'll follow her pretty much anywhere. And I'm really happy to report that faith is still, you know, well-founded, at least as far as this movie goes. I think she's very good in this film. I don't think that the movie itself really has a whole lot to do with her performance. There are a few things that I think that does that are interesting, and maybe we can get into those in just a second. But I think as a whole, there are some interesting outlines of ideas that you kind of glimpse from now and then in the film, but it doesn't really commit to enough of them to really feel like it's fully fleshed out. I guess there's a lot of half-baked stuff in this film that I was really hoping would become fully baked, but I think overall it was interesting enough to hold my attention. Thanks mostly to Chastain's work, but you know, also the rest of the cast as well.
It's fascinating. You read an article that sort of gave you some background. I grew up in the Assemblies of God. It was a part of the Assemblies of God for a while, and the Bakers were Assemblies of God ministers. Though when you're in the Assemblies of God, there is a lot of leeway, and there's not necessarily a lot of oversight at times, just kind of depending on where you're at and how you operate. And so you have ministers or churches that will act independently. And so the Bakers are sort of this AG lore. And he was, of course, defrocked when everything came down in the late 80s. So I know the story. And then I actually edited a piece by S.D. Kelly at Christ and Pop Culture titled "Crying in Public, The Cost of Gawking at Tanya and Tammy Faye." And I very much appreciated her work in that piece because she talks about Tanya Harding and the film I, Tanya. And then she talks about the documentary that this movie is based on of the same name, The Eyes of Tammy Faye. And it really kind of pushed me to reconsider Tammy Faye's part in all of this. And so as I watch this film with Jessica Chastain, I'm not necessarily surprised that it lands on the side of Tammy Faye, like the documentary. This is a film that's mostly sympathetic to her and her character. And as we go through this discussion, we can kind of dig into that. In terms of overall thoughts, I'm not really a fan of the film, Kevin. And I think there's a couple of different reasons why. Thematically, I don't know if it says anything new. I really don't walk away with a deeper exploration of the ideas, the motivations in this story of faith, of prosperity. It's just not really there. And so what we're forced to do is sort of rely on the story. I don't think the story is well told. I think it kind of jumps around and hops around a bit. And so overall, love Jessica Chastain, and I think her performance is the best part of this movie, but was left kind of disappointed, Kevin.
Yeah, well, you're definitely right that there are some frustrating storytelling choices, I guess, in this film. There's so much ground that's covered in the life of the Bakers, pretty much through montage. And unfortunately, it's those portions of their lives that are elided through these montages, where you kind of feel like that's where the meat of the story is. You know, at what point did they go from being kind of these hard scrabble itinerant preachers with a traveling puppet show to kind of living in these palatial mansions? And, you know, at what point did their ministry go from being a ministry to being a business? And there, it does seem, at least in this film's telling, that there is a transition that happens at some point. At the beginning of the film, when we see Jim and Tammy Faye, they first meet, they first kind of like strike out on their own, they're really portrayed as true believers. They're not cynics. You know, Tammy Faye obviously is, especially if you kind of dig deep into the saga, she's usually understood to be pretty genuine and sincere throughout their years together, even after, you know, Baker started to really misappropriate funds and kind of really go into his downward spiral. But even Jim Baker himself, as played by Andrew Garfield, is at the beginning portrayed as a true believer, somebody who sincerely wants to do good, who maybe has some questionable theology, but kind of more or less has his heart in the right place, even though he's obviously very ambitious as well. And then at some point, there's a montage and we see their meteoric rise kind of communicated to the audience through kind of a cliche of, you know, all these newspaper headlines kind of spinning up towards the screen. And after that montage happens, we're kind of in a different phase of their lives where they're very well off and they're much more successful. And it seems like something has changed in at least Jim, if not Tammy Faye's heart. And it does feel like Showalter and his editors, Mary Jo Markey and Andrew Weisblum, are kind of, there's something left on the cutting room floor that is really instrumental to the story, or at least is the most interesting part of this story. And it's just a shame that we never get to see that.
Yes, because you have a montage. And It is cliche, but it's a fun montage, and Tammy Faye is singing throughout it. But these individuals go from being somewhat sincere, like you mentioned, and immediately they have a huge empire, and we already get the sense that Jim is participating in a number of illegal activities, or he's moving funds around. What caused him to do this? And I want to see more of that. I like Andrew Garfield. He is not given a very good script here. As a result, there's really nothing to explore about his character. And when we leave the film, we're not really sure if this was just kind of a whirlwind accident and he got caught up in just a bad scheme, if he's truly repentant. And it's not because the film wants to be a bit ambiguous. It's because the film doesn't even really want to explore that in his life. And I know this is Tammy Faye's story, but she's also being swept along in that current too. And his character, of course, is going to boost the overall quality of the film. As for Tammy Faye, I want to see more of where this love for the outcast comes from. I want to see more of why she continues to stick with Jim. I want to see a little bit more of that inward nature, and we don't get that. And then I think too, Kevin, I'm really kind of parsing my thoughts in terms of how these individuals and how this story is depicted and the POV for it. So obviously this is from the perspective of Tammy Faye. And these characters, to me, even though they are outlandish individuals, they're based on these outlandish individuals, the characters on screen, they don't ever feel real. And it, for someone like me who did grow up watching televangelists and someone who grew up in the Pentecostal tradition, this feels like someone who was on the outside who has a cliche sort of understanding of this. And I'm not like absolving these individuals. I'm not a fan at all of the Bakers and what they did. But it doesn't feel like a real story. It doesn't feel like these are real individuals. It's someone who says, oh, this would be fun to make a movie about those crazy televangelists. And we do get some humanizing with Tammy Faye. At the same time, I don't think it's enough. Now, the opposite or the other side could say, well, we're watching this from Tammy Faye's perspective and it's kind of glossed over and et cetera. I just don't know that it works. It just doesn't feel right. And maybe it's because I've been in services like this or I've seen stuff like this firsthand. It feels like it's based on a cliche, and these individuals just don't quite understand, or they don't quite get that scene. And so that kind of rubbed me the wrong way too. I was just like, okay, that's not really how these people talk. Maybe it's how these people talk on camera, but not all the time. And so, yeah, that was one of the issues I had with the film.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'd be interested to hear you talk about that more in detail. I do think that there's a shallowness to the portrayals here. And I don't think it's necessarily that Showalter is doing a full-on caricature of these individuals and this mode of Christian spirituality. Like it doesn't feel like he is like this, or at least to me it didn't feel like this was a gawking sideshow where we're just sort of like meant to look at all these, you know, crazy fundamentalists and their, you know, the ecstasies that they go into during religious services or the Christianese that they speak. Like that doesn't feel quite like what Showalter is doing here. I think the problem as I see it is more that Showalter just doesn't seem very interested in drawing out what the experience of spirituality feels like, whether or not, you know, you're putting on a show or you're genuinely feeling something, the experience of, you know, being in a very passionate religious service, or working together with lots of other Christians towards a common goal. Like, there's a very specific feeling to that. And it's not so much that it's caricatured, I think, as it is just the film isn't so much interested in portraying that at all. Now, I do think that there's one exception that kind of hints at maybe what this movie could have been. And I think it's in the scenes where Showalter depicts Tammy Faye Baker praying by herself all alone. And so she kind of, you know, she folds her hands and she speaks out loud, you know, addresses the Lord directly, and, you know, speaks out loud for a little while. And then what Showalter does is he goes from Jessica Chastain speaking on camera to voiceover, where the prayer continues, or the dialogue continues, still in Jessica Chastain's voice, but it's all in voiceover. And that seems like an interesting way to depict how, at least the way Showalter sees prayer, it's sort of it's a conversation in the sense that, you know, it's not just Jessica Chastain monologuing to an empty room. There's some sort of shift there where she's in dialogue with something, but it's all in her voice. And I think that is kind of an interesting way of portraying prayer, especially for somebody who maybe eventually loses their way in spirituality and forgets that they are addressing somebody outside of themselves, somebody who doesn't necessarily speak with our own voice and tells us just what we want to hear and wants to give us exactly what we ask for at any given moment. I mean, there's some truth to that. I just wish that kind of interesting use of cinematic language was employed elsewhere in the film to kind of portray the complexities of the spiritual experience, if not how most Christians experience, at least how this specific Christian, Tammy Faye, experienced it. And it's disappointing that it wasn't really, Showalter doesn't really do more with that elsewhere in other scenes.
Yeah, no, that's a strong scene. And I think in terms of the depiction, some of the dialogue just doesn't, well, hey there, Tammy Faye. Oh, hey, it's just, that's, I don't ever come across people who talk like that. Like even, like maybe on screen, like maybe televangelist with the fake smile, but there's never, I don't know. It didn't seem genuine or authentic to me. And I think it is fascinating to watch her character, who is very much this outspoken woman who has the ability to lead the charge on her own. And she's constantly told to, like, no, you're like second fiddle, or you are second chair. And so some of the themes, or the theme that resonated with me the most, was the idea of how ministry often sidelines women who are capable of leading. And I think we see that with Tammy Faye, or at least see parts of that. Now, was Tammy Faye capable of leading this entire network, or should she even? That's kind of another question. I think that theme was pretty strong. I did want to see a little more, though, in terms of the prosperity gospel. We hear talk about that. The theology, as you mentioned, is off base at the beginning when they're at North Central. And I'd like to see how that sort of motivates them and moves them. Instead, we get this sort of like one-dimensional, well, it just all becomes about the money and they just want to be rich. But how does their theology fuel that within them? And then there was talk of the help that they did around the world. And I'd love to see a deeper exploration of that, because it almost, if they were using it as a shield to say, well, we live this way, but we do so much. And there, so I see all these thematic elements, these ripe elements for the film to really kind of dig into and explore with these characters. And it's just not there. It doesn't happen. And then as a result, now I'm just focusing mostly on the story. And the story to me just falls flat in a number of different places.
Yeah, I mean, and this is maybe where we get into what I mentioned right at the beginning, which is that it does feel like there's some interesting elements to the story, but it doesn't seem as if I'm not sure if this is a screenplay issue, the Abe Sylvia screenplay. Like, I'm not sure if it's just, that's just kind of, it was a little bit underbaked on the page, or if Showalter just kind of doesn't quite succeed in presenting it in a way that brings out these thematic elements to the fore and kind of focuses on what needs to be focused on. But there are just tantalizing hints of a really intriguing film. I really like the supporting role that Vincent D'Onofrio has in here as Jerry Falwell Sr. Yeah. And the subtle ways that the competitiveness between him and Baker is brought out. You know, there's one scene where they're in a studio and they're kind of talking about how many viewers each of their television shows gets. And, you know, Falwell mentions he's got so many million, and then Baker kind of says, "Oh, praise God, that's so wonderful." And then you can tell he's kind of slow rolling his own revelation that he's got like, 10 times that many viewers on his show. And just the interplay of that dynamic is really fun to watch. And to me, at least, that did feel authentic, just having been around, church leaders, where there is kind of that sense of competitiveness, of your reach is what's the most important. And it's really easy to sort of cloak that in this, oh, we're all just doing it for the kingdom of God, right? But deep down inside, you can tell that there's a lot of personal investment in how big those audience numbers and congregations and donations are in the hearts of the people leading these ministries. And I do think also that there's the, Wade, you and I, we talk a lot about how the climactic standing ovation in biopic is so annoying. It just needs to go away. And, you know, there, this film kind of almost seems it simultaneously falls into that trap while also subverting it a little bit. And I think that if it had leaned more into this idea of Tammy Faye being a symbol of the way that American celebrity culture can infect just about anything, and how it can kind of lend this air of glitz and spectacle to just about anything, and how that glitz and spectacle in a way becomes its own prison. That would have been really interesting to see played out over the course of the entire film. As it is, it does feel a little bit like it's kind of shoved into the coda to this movie and doesn't really get the attention that it ought, which is maybe why that climactic scene doesn't land with the oomph maybe that it should, because it does feel like this is basically a tragedy. The way that Tammy Faye was brought into this kind of orbit, and it ended up ruining her life, and, you know, many, and just caused this huge scandal. And yet there's a way that she clings to that kind of desiring to use her gifts for God's glory. I don't know. I think that that's just something that's so compelling. It's just a shame that this film shows only flashes of that rather than really delving deep into it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go all in from Tammy Faye's POV, it needs to have more, at least certain elements of that final sequence. And we get some of that in the montage, but it doesn't follow through in the rest of the picture. And what I wanted to see too, Kevin, is you're talking about prison. I would have loved to see some more photography where their glitzy homes and their fake television sets in turn would become claustrophobic. And to use that architecture, which the production design is there and the production design is good, but how can you harness that to visually tell this story? Because I think that, you know, the sets of TBN, the sets of this network, those types of sets, which are instantly recognizable with the fake gold and all of that, that is a great metaphor just in general for what this story, I think, is trying to tell. So use that here. But yes, I think Jessica Chastain is really great, and it is hard to not want to watch a film or even not enjoy a film where she's just given this type of role to act out. I think that it also says something about what SD Kelly mentioned in her piece, the way that we gawk at these individuals and the way that we create stories when, as you watch this, hopefully it'll probably push you to reconsider Tammy Faye. Not necessarily turning her into a hero or saying that she was even right to go along with all of this, but hopefully understanding her as an individual and as a person. And I think the film at least attempts to do that, and it gives us a sympathetic protagonist. I guess that's the best way to say it. And so that's definitely something to commend.
Yeah. Chastain is so good in this film. There's a scene in this film where there's a business meeting going on in the living room of the Baker's mansion. And, you know, Jim is pitching a potential investor on this theme park idea that he has for, you know, that's Bible themed. And it, I think it's Old Jerusalem is what he's trying to complete. And there's going to be a water park. There's all sorts of, you know, crazy stuff that he's trying to pitch. And the investors obviously got cold feet and is about to pull out. And Tammy Faye's kind of hovering in the background. And this is during the part of her life where she's, you know, she's really struggling with addiction. And you can tell that Jim Baker's really trying to kind of like shove her off to the side. And yet by the end of the scene, she comes in and she essentially, what Chastain does is amazing. You see Tammy Faye like knowing the way that Jim views her and kind of feeling that hurt, but also coming to his rescue anyway with this investor. And just the way that she kind of holds all these elements in tension, where she's a little bit stoned on some pills. She is deeply hurt by the way she's being treated. She is also turning on, like doing a very calculated turn on of her charm in order to win this investor back. And there's a little bit of desire to, yes, I kind of do think that this is something that could help bring people to the Lord. There's all of those elements and none of them are dominant, but they're all there mixed together. And just, it's such an incredible balancing act and does, like you were saying, so much to humanize Tammy Faye and really bring all of the elements that make her and really bring her to life on screen in front of us. And I think that even though the film isn't wholly successful, I do think that Chastain really just knocks it out of the park with this role. And I would probably watch this film again just to watch her again. I think she's that good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, she is really great. And you really see her carry the picture. And it definitely is. It's fun to watch someone who's good at their job, who's good, who's talented, and we see that here. Listeners, that is our review, The Eyes of Tammy Faye. It's currently playing in theaters. If you have a chance to see it, we'd love to get your thoughts. This is a film that's definitely up the alley of seeing and believing. So let us know what you think. Tweet us at CBelievePod, at CBelievePod. You can also email us, seeingandbelievingcapc@gmail.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Kevin, we are nearing the end of our show. At this point, we recommend something from the world of television and or film to our listeners. What would you like to recommend to our listeners this week?
So I was thinking about, you know, what biopics could I recommend? What movies about real life famous figures could I recommend this week? And, you know, there have been a few that I really like, but I think I've recommended them on past shows. So I was really kind of racking my brains like, what would be, they're good biopics are kind of thin on the ground, at least as far as I'm concerned. So I was really coming up empty. And then I remembered that there's a 1994 documentary about the underground cartoonist and artist Robert Crumb. It's directed by Terry Zwigoff. Its title is simply Crumb. This, you know, Crumb is famous for his work kind of as a figure in the counterculture of the 60s and 70s. He created Fritz the Cat. He was famous for having this long-running cartoon strip, Keep on Truckin'. And he's a very strange individual, to put it mildly. He's got some very strange preoccupations about sex and about society and about himself. And they all work themselves out in various ways through his art, which is simultaneously cartoonish and garish and very technically accomplished, and sometimes a little bit off-putting and disturbing as well. And so he's just a fascinating, very complex, weird character, I guess. And so this is just a documentary that kind of just follows him around and takes the audience into his subconscious so that we can kind of get a sense not just for how he created the art, but why he created his art. And I don't know, I think it's just, if you know of Crumb or just kind of interested in figures like him, I think it's a really worthwhile documentary.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating and definitely works for the movie that we just talked about. No, that's a good recommendation. I'm going to go in a different direction. And so I'm not actually going to recommend necessarily something from the world of television and or film, but it does relate to the eyes of Tammy Faye. In 2013, Kate Bowler published a fascinating book called Blessed, A History of the American Prosperity Gospel. And she covers the Bakers. You get a good sense of their story, but she also, I mean, really she begins centuries ago and looks at how the prosperity gospel came to become a dominant theology in the United States. And so if you're interested in that topic, maybe to dig into this a little bit more, Blessed is, it's a very good book. I really enjoyed reading the history of a movement that I knew about, even experienced a little bit. But to see it from that vantage point. So no, I thought that was a pretty good book. So Kate Bowler's Blessed.
Oh, that's an interesting recommendation. I've heard of Bowler's work, but I haven't heard of Blessed specifically. So I might have to track that down. That sounds like an interesting topic.
Yeah, no, it's very good. She kind of operates in that vein. She's got some other works. I believe she does a podcast too. All of her stuff that I've read, a couple books now. Is pretty good. Kevin, we've reached the end of the show, and you mentioned earlier that we have an announcement. It's kind of a weird thing to talk about. I've been kind of going through in my mind how exactly to say this, because it is it's not necessarily easy. But we've been doing this podcast, Kevin, for about 6.5 years. My oldest son is 8. And we began doing this podcast when he was 1. I mean, it's just wild. Episode 305. And just doing, I've been doing a lot of thinking, also not to overly spiritualize, but doing some praying, and life has just kind of changed recently for me. The two businesses that I helped to found, it's getting bigger. I mean, we've got, over a dozen people that are working for us, and that's been growing. And then Priscilla is due with our third boy at the end of October. I have a second book that's going to be coming out here soon, just finishing up some of the final edits on it and just kind of thinking through what are some things that I'd like to do? What are some next steps? And so after all of that, just kind of thinking about it, talking to Priscilla and everything, I've decided that I'm actually going to have to step down. I feel like it's the right time to step down from Seeing and Believing. And we'll talk more about this in the next couple of weeks. This is not my last episode. I actually will have two more episodes left. So my final episode will be at the beginning of October. But this is, like I said, really hard, difficult decision because I enjoy doing the podcast. I enjoy reviewing films. But I just love talking to you every week, Kevin. So kind of a weird thing. Listeners, I'll be around for a couple of weeks. And then, Kevin, I don't have any doubts about the future of Seeing and Believing. I know that you're going to do a good job as you kind of move forward with the podcast and hopefully even take it to new places. And so I'm excited about seeing where it goes and excited too about just being a listener to Seeing and Believing. So that's going to be good.
Yeah, you know, I'm excited to see where it goes myself. I have not quite figured that out yet. There's a lot of work still to be done, but I can say one thing for sure, and that's that it's going to be a very different show without you in the co-host seat. I mean, 6.5 years, it does feel like, you know, we've forged our own on-air dynamic, of course, but of course we've also forged a friendship, and it's just been... It's been great having you as a host and a friend over those 6.5 years. It's going to be very different hosting the show, continuing it in whatever form it does continue without you also on the air. So that is going to be a new journey for me, but we're really excited. I think, you know, I'm not the only one who's really excited. I'm sure that there are listeners who've gotten to know you over the course of that of those years, as well as I have almost, and have, you know, are excited to see you kind of continue on with these various projects that you have going forward, and just the release of your book, the birth of your third son. It's all really incredible and something to look forward to with great anticipation. So obviously, like you said, we're going to be talking in more detail about, you know, what this means for the future of the show, but also, you know, having a send-off for you, because we couldn't let you go without having something a little bit grander than just a simple review. So that, listeners, keep an eye out for that in the next couple of weeks. It's going to be really great. Even though we are going to wave our hankies farewell to you, Wade, you know, you will always be here in our hearts.
Hey, there you go. And I'm sure... Maybe every once in a while, I'll hop on Skype when I know you're recording and just try to merge into the call so I can I can be a part of the episode again.
It'll be like those scenes in The Matrix where, you know, the agent takes over somebody's body and all of a sudden, you know, it's an agent there. That's how I kind of imagine it going with these Skype calls, where all of a sudden my voice begins to change and all of a sudden it's Wade here instead of Kevin. That would be, you know, maybe a little bit disconcerting at first, but I'm sure that listeners will get used to it eventually.
You'll be like, man, it only happens during the episodes where we review a Steven Spielberg film or a Christopher Nolan film. It's like, wait.
An MCU movie?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know about that. That's like half the episodes, right? But thanks for the kind words. I'm interested in, I'm excited about the show and the future of the show, and trading one child, the podcast, for another child. That's kind of how I how I see it. Now, listeners, I'd love to, these next 2 weeks, as we hear from each other and talk through, we're going to have fun as we close it out. We're actually going to be reviewing a film for one of our Patreon requests. So kind of closing that out. And we're going to be talking about next week, Paul Thomas Anderson's Magnolia from 1999. I am so excited that out of the two episodes I have left, I get to talk about Magnolia. That just seems like a perfect film to discuss, Kevin, on Seeing and Believing. And we've just kind of, we've mentioned the film a little bit, but that's going to be good. So listeners, catch that next week. For now, thank you for checking out this week's episode. It's brought to you by ChristandPopCulture.com. Our producer is Jonathan Clausen, who every week helps us to search for the sacred on screen. I'm Wade Bearden. My co-host is Kevin McLenathan. And until next time, this is Seeing and Believing. We'll see you later.
You have been listening to Seeing and Believing, an official production of the Christ and Pop Culture Podcast Network. Please rate and review the show in iTunes and check out our other shows at christandpopculture.com/network. Theme music by Alexander Osborne and Lindsay Miz, used under Creative Commons License 3.0.
This episode was brought to you in part by the Truce Podcast. The new season examines the connection between some evangelicals and the Republican Party with the help of world-class historians. Subscribe to Truce in your podcast app or listen at trucepodcast.com.